Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Let's shift a little Blue Jays. That off day yesterday, back in action tonight as they open a three-game series against the Baltimore Orioles. A big, big series. Orioles 41-24. We're nipping at the heels of the Orioles, but Blue Jays had maybe salvaged a little bit of this past weekend with the Biggio home run to get that win on Sunday. Day off, currently in Baltimore, is our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's been a while. It's Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play announcer for sports. And how's it going, Dan?
Good, Ailish. How are you?
I am swell. It's great to hear from you. How's Baltimore?
Baltimore is very nice. I got in late last night, and I've already had my morning coffee. And my Whole Foods run is awaiting me at noon. Ooh. I'm going to go get my salad, get my workout in. It's going to be things deteriorate later on in the day. So you got to start strong and just try to get through the finish line if you can.
I like that. It's a good way to maybe hope that the Blue Jays will start strong on this three-game road trip, three-game series, I guess, against the Baltimore Orioles. I mean, this is a pretty big one. We don't always say that big series happened in June, but after a little bit of an off May and start to June, how important do you think that this series is against a team like the Baltimore Orioles?
Huge. And I know, like, people like me have been saying for weeks, look at the schedule that's coming up, look at the schedule. But it's been an unbelievable, you know, they just finished this 30-31 that we've been talking about forever. And they have an off day yesterday, which is great. And then you look ahead and it's Baltimore, Texas, Miami coming up on this road trip. The good news is the schedule finally on paper gets easier after that. They've got Oakland and San Francisco. The Red Sox are struggling, the White Sox, and then the Tigers. That's a stretch where they need to make up some ground. But this Baltimore one is big because it's not a stretch at all to think that it could come down to maybe the Blue Jays and Orioles for a playoff spot. You have no idea. So, you know, they lost all three to Baltimore at the Rogers Center whenever it was, 3-4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. These are big. You know, they've got to find a way to hold their own on this road trip and you know, ideally, at least take two out of three here and make up a little ground.
You mentioned Oakland. I mean, they're the best team of baseball all of a sudden.
That's
so,
true, yeah. I should. My bad.
No, it's funny because I always make fun of them as well. And then I just, the last 5 days, I've been betting against them and they just won't stop. So I don't know. I mean, maybe they're scarier than Baltimore. But, okay, so the Blue Jays lost, you said, the three against Baltimore, the Rogers Center. So in the last X amount of weeks or month and since they've played, where's your point of confidence that this is maybe a Blue Jays team that can get two or three out of Baltimore?
Well, one thing is I don't think Baltimore is playing quite as well. In looking at some of their stuff on the plane on the way down last night, they are 10-8 since they left Toronto. That includes a sweep they just had over Kansas City. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit, like not a lot, but there's a little bit of they've played an easier schedule. If you look at like Kansas City, the White Sox, Detroit, and again, Oakland, Baltimore's played 20 games against those teams. The Blue Jays have played 10 games against those teams. So that's not to say it's all the schedule, but it's a little bit the schedule. And Baltimore's done a nice job beating up on the teams they're supposed to beat up on. So I think Baltimore's good. I think they're legitimate. I think they're a worthy playoff contender. But I don't know that they're leaps and bounds better than the Blue Jays. If the Blue Jays play as well as they're capable of playing, I think they're the better team. So, you know, we'll see how they do. They've got Bassett, Berríos, Kikuchi, it looks like, for this series. The three guys the Orioles have are all capable, but the Blue Jays have beaten all of them before. And, you know, it might come down to can they swing the bats here well. So I think it's a very fair fight, to be honest with you, between these two teams. I mean, the Orioles are certainly not the punching bags they were 2-3 years ago, but I don't know that they are leaps and bounds better than the Blue Jays either. I think it's a pretty even matchup.
Dan, are you surprised at all that Bassett, Berríos, Kikuchi? I think there was an opportunity here to maybe at least separate the Kikuchi bullpen day going back to back, but maybe it just tells you how important these games are. It's like, yeah, do you really want to have a bullpen day in Baltimore here with these games, meaning maybe a little bit more than the ones that will follow. However, the point stands. I mean, having Kikuchi in the bullpen day back-to-back sets you up for at least some stress on the shoulders of Kevin Gausman if the bullpen is taxed to get through those two games back-to-back in the order. Are you surprised that they didn't do anything with the probables and they're going with the regular rotation at this point?
I'm not surprised that they're not doing it in Baltimore for a couple of reasons. You mentioned one. I think the Baltimore games are huge. Not that the Texas games aren't, because it could also come down to the Blue Jays and Rangers for a playoff spot. But I think they're staying on schedule for Baltimore. This is an extra day of rest for all three of these guys who will pitch in Baltimore. And I'm not convinced the bullpen day is coming Friday. The bullpen day could be Saturday. It comes down to, do you want to give Gausman an extra day of rest and have the bullpen day go Friday, or you can flip it and Gausman can be on regular rest because they had an off day yesterday, and you could put the bullpen day in there Saturday. And if you put the bullpen day in there Saturday, you only need the bullpen day one spot on this road trip, the fifth game of nine, the middle game of the nine. And then after this road trip, you've got off days Thursday and Monday. Then you can do whatever you want. You can easily split Kikuchi in the bullpen day. That would be my guess. My guess is Gausman goes Friday, Trevor Richards and whoever go Saturday. Then you go back to the other four guys in order. So Gausman gets the last game of the road trip as well. And then coming out of that, I haven't like mapped it out beyond that game by game. But again, once you've got off days Thursday and Monday, you can do whatever you want. You can give guys an extra off day and split up Kikuchi in the bullpen day and whatever you want. So we'll find out. And I'm sure it'll be the first question John Schneider gets asked today. I'm sure he won't answer the question today because he doesn't need to answer the question today. We'll probably find out Thursday. We'll hear things like, you know, it depends on how things go between now and then. But they've mapped it out. Like they've thought of all the different options and they've mapped it out. But my guess would be Gausman Friday, bullpen day Saturday.
Do you have any key takeaways from the bullpen day on Saturday? How you might tinker with it just a little bit? I mean, Trevor Richards seems like the right starter in that sort of scenario, given that he's pitched at a really high level and looked comfortable doing it. It seemed like they ran out of gas or options or just enough arms by the end of it. But are there some key takeaways from the initial run from the bullpen?
Well, first of all, Richards did incredibly well. I mean, seven strikeouts through three innings is ridiculously good, you know, for a guy who had only pitched three innings once before. And he's been one of the kind of the hidden stars of this team this year. I think they, and this is truly an it depends, like if they're going to do it on Saturday, it depends what happens Friday and Thursday and all that. So, but for, you know, as of now, Thomas Hatch is on the team and he can give them multiple innings. Obviously, Nate Pearson can be used in a game like this if he's not needed elsewhere. But, you know, again, I truly think this is a that depends. Bowden Francis will be back at some point. They liked him. Things have a way of working themselves out. I don't know if they can get him back by then. They can't unless there, you know, is an injury or some roster manipulation or something like that. But he'll be back at some point. But I would think Richards is the opener or the starter or whatever you want to say, but they've got a decision to make with him. I mean, do you keep doing this every time you need this spot, or do you think he is more valuable being used in other areas? And I'm not sure if we know the answer to that yet, but you know, Richards will definitely be involved. And then after that, it probably depends on who was used in the couple of days leading up to it.
Chatting with Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play announcer for us here at Sportsnet. So I think the rotation has been maybe the biggest point of conversation as of late. You know, Alek Manoah obviously headed down to the Florida Complex League, but I think maybe the best thing that I've gleaned from this is how much this team has kind of bonded together. Maybe that's been shown by the rest of the starting pitchers. Not only have they obviously been great friends and great teammates to Alek Manoah, but that stretch right after that series with the Houston Astros, we saw the next three up really dial it in and look like they wanted to help this team. I wonder for you, and you're around the guys all the time, what this maybe difficult point in the season has meant to the team unity, what you're seeing in terms of like the community around the clubhouse and how much they kind of rely on each other to get through this type of week that wasn't always positive, as you know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on and off the field the last couple of weeks. And I do think they're a close group, and I think they are fortunate, and we're not in there all the time, but I think they are fortunate from what I can tell that they've got a lot of leadership in the room. They got a lot of veteran voices. I mean, when you have a Chapman, a Springer, a Merrifield, a Gausman, a Bassett, you got a lot of guys who have been around. This is not the young team of baby-faced kids that it was a few years ago. You know, all the guys I mentioned have come in the last 3 years. They're all in their 30s. And they've all played on good teams at times in their careers at all. So I do think they're close. I don't know if you guys saw or talked about it. They did one of these goofy, you know, let's all dress like Matt Chapman on the airplane on the way down, right? Which is kind of funny. To me, Matt Chapman was the most authentic Matt Chapman of the group, but there were some close contenders in that contest as well. I think they know they haven't played as well as they should have played. They obviously are well aware of the difficulty of the stretch they just came through in terms of the schedule. They're aware of the challenges of this road trip as well. And again, not that they're all hanging their hats on just 9 more days and then it gets easier, but I think they understand they're still in it. Aren't they half a game out? I think they're half a game out of a playoff spot right now. So they're a game behind the Yankees and they're a half game behind Houston. Like, things haven't gone well, and they're a game behind the Yankees and a half game behind Houston. I'm not saying they're going to make it. I don't know. They got to play better. But I think they've got really good leadership and some mature voices in the room that help them through some difficult times. You know, and if they can just stabilize that fifth spot, that helps a lot. I believe they are 4-10 in that spot. Obviously, most of that is Manoah starts, 13 out of 14. And unfortunately for him and the team, most of the time they just didn't have a chance to win those games because he was struggling as much as they have. But, you know, hopefully Belt is back tonight. Hopefully Kiermaier's back tonight. Hopefully Jansen is back tonight. Those are also questions that have to be asked. You know, down the road, maybe you've got Hyunjin Ryu and Chad Green. That's a month away at least, maybe 6 weeks away. But there are some reasons to think that I believe their record will improve, and it'll have to improve probably for them to secure a spot in the playoffs. But, you know, they're still in the fight, and I think they believe in themselves.
Maybe most representative of things not going quite as good as you expected would be Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There are some metrics over the 30 and 31 that he was, you know, if not the worst, close to the worst batter for the Blue Jays over that key stretch. Are you a little surprised by now that the continued inability to shake the slump? I mean, there have been signs, but it's still not Vlad yet. Has it reached surprising levels for you?
It has to a certain extent for me. So a couple of things. He set the bar so high for himself that even if he's better than like a couple of other guys on the team, we'll focus on his struggles more because he's Vlad and he's supposed to be a generational type of hitter. I spent like 45 minutes yesterday on a website called Baseball Savant, which, you know, it breaks down everything, the underlying stuff, you know, the hard hit percentage and the launch angle and the chase percentage and the swing and miss percentage. Like, I ignored the numbers, I ignored the home runs and all that stuff. I just looked at the underlying StatCast stuff. And I talked to somebody in the organization, too, about him. And those numbers still look good. And I said to them, it doesn't really meet the eye test. It doesn't feel like he's crushing the ball and elevating the ball and barreling up the ball and et cetera, et cetera. And if he is, how come the surface numbers aren't better? And it's a little bit mystifying to me. They feel, and it looks like, he's making better contact than, you know, his numbers suggest, but you just don't see it on a regular basis. I think he's gotten a little bit, and I think it's understandable. You know, he's supposed to hit a lot of home runs, right? And everybody knows he hasn't hit a home run at home. That's a thing. Like, that's clearly on his mind. He wouldn't be human if it wasn't. He doesn't look the same to me as he did in April. I thought in April he made remarkable swing decisions, didn't chase, hit the ball up the middle into right field, like hit line drives, bullets, like Matt Chapman was hitting back in April. I thought he looked great. I don't think he looks the same anymore. I think it looks to me like he's trying to pull the ball and lift the ball more, which is, you know, a way to try to hit home runs. And I don't think it's quite working for him. So I imagine he's feeling a lot of weight on his shoulders. He's supposed to be the dude on this team, right? Whatever team he's on, he's supposed to be the guy. And he's not. But it to me, it is a little bit concerning, because if this team is going to be great, I think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has to be great. And he hasn't been as bad, I think, as he's been, portrayed as recently, but he hasn't been as good as they need him to get either. This is a tough ballpark to change things, because they moved the left field fence back a mile and a half here, and it's a whole different ballpark than it used to be. It's tough for right-handed hitters here, but I just hope Vladdy gets back to the process, like taking the pitches he's supposed to take, just hitting line drives. You know, his natural swing is not one that elevates the ball crazy to a crazy extent to hit a ton of home runs. His natural swing hits rockets, hits line drives, Some of them get caught. Some of them go out. Some of them hit the fence. But I hope he gets back to his natural process and his natural swing and just lives with those results, whatever they may be.
Not that Blue Jays fans have been inclined to offer him grace, but Kevin Biggio would be at the opposite end of the spectrum, at least in terms of expectations when it comes to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And one swing does not make a season. But a little faith in Kevin Biggio over the last little while justified, given that he's had a little bit of an uptick in performance and he's delivered a big moment, at least this weekend.
He's actually been kind of quietly pretty good for about 3-4 weeks. He's got, again, I looked at this is what you do on an off day when you're as boring as I am. You look at stuff like this. And his OPS over the last month or so or something is like 760, which is, you know, noticeably above average in the major leagues. He's played a little bit more. He's hit a little bit more. He's made some swing changes that he told me about a few days ago, and we documented on the broadcast. I can't remember, maybe Friday or something like that. I think he's doing okay. I mean, he's not going to be a star, but he can be a contributor. He had a hit on an 0-2 pitch on the weekend, and then he hit that second longest home run of his career. And especially when they had other guys out, like with Kiermaier out and Belt out, like they had a need, and he stepped in and had arguably the biggest hit of the season for them. Like, I think we'd be having a whole different and it's only one win, but, and I'm sure you guys would agree, I think we'd be having a whole different conversation if they had lost that game on Sunday. So that's a big moment for the team and a big moment for him. And I think he's contributing, which is all you ask him to do, whether he gets one start a week or four starts a week, you know, just hit a home run every now and again, take a walk every now and again, play adequate defense wherever they put him, second, first, or right. And I think he's been better the last month.
Dan, are the Blue Jays fans just the best all-star game voters in the league? They're stuffing the ballot boxes. We've got Bo, yeah. Vlad, Chapman already leading the top of their positions for top vote getters. Any chance you could see all three, maybe more, at the all-star game?
It's funny, you know, as you'll find out if you go on any other team's fans account. Well, it's not fair, you know. They've got a whole country behind them. Bo's going to win it. Mm-hmm. He's way out in front. I don't know the exact numbers, but I looked at them yesterday. Bo's way out in front. The only other guy worthy of it would be Wander Franco, and he's not going to get enough votes. So Bo will be there. I don't think Vladdy will start. Yandy Diaz was right on his heels. And to be honest, Yandy Diaz is having a better season than Vlad is. And I would imagine, even though he's a Ray, that and that's why it amazes me Franco's not getting more votes, because Yandy Diaz is getting a ton. I would imagine Yandy Diaz overtakes Vlad, but you never know. Chapman has a shot. I think second was Josh Young, the rookie third baseman for the Rangers, who's having a very nice season. But Chapman's numbers are comparable and his defense is better. And he's a bigger name. So I think Matt Chapman's got a shot. In terms of starting, I would think that's it. Bichette will get there. Chapman might get there. Vladdy could get there as a reserve. Even a guy like Whit Merrifield's got a chance. If you look at second base, it's not like overflowing with candidates. But, you know, like Kansas City's got to get a guy. Oakland's got to get a guy. And that, you know, that can impact some of the reserves as well. To me, Kevin Gausman should be there. And Jordan Romano could be there. So I think they'll be well represented, maybe somewhere, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5, although that seems like a bit of a stretch, which is nice. It's always nice. I'm sure they would trade a couple of all-star bids for a few more wins in the standings, though, and do it that way. But it's nice to see, especially Bo Bichette, getting the recognition that he deserves for the season he's had.
So we learned about Kevin Gausman and the rally beers over the weekend. Not that you ever have bad broadcasts, Dan, but if maybe you felt like you didn't have your best show, how does Dan Shulman, either Buck or Joe, bump a little broadcasting slump?
I beat myself up mentally until the next game.
No, that's not as fun.
I find that's very helpful. You know what? I guess it's like the term where you hear, like if a closer blows a save, or if a team gets destroyed in a game, you hear the phrase, you know, you just flush it. I try to learn from the moment. If I make a mistake that really bothers me and it happens, I might go back and watch it, but I'll probably say, okay, here's what I did wrong. Here's what I need to do right. And then you try to put it out of your mind. It's just like a reliever, actually, because you've got another game the next day. So I do beat myself up, not as much as I did when I was younger. You get a, you know, you I guess you change your ways, you change your views a little bit as you get older. But yeah, and a nice glass of wine helps too. I'm one of these people that thinks wine makes everything better. So Hazel and Joe and I made everything better last night. We had a nice glass of wine last night. So, yeah.
I thought it might have been like fries instead of the salad at Whole Foods or something.
I will do a little bit of that. I will do nachos more. Mm, yeah, nachos is a problem. Yeah, but there were no nachos in my available universe last night. So, but we had a nice night. Yeah, wine makes everything better. I'd hope I'm pretty good. I'm very disciplined until about 3 o'clock. I'll be at the make your own salad at Whole Foods, but I cannot promise you what I might eat at 10:30 after the game tonight.
Only celebratory wine for a couple good broadcasts in Baltimore. Yes. We look forward to them, Dan. Thanks for joining us this morning, and we'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Have a great day. Thanks.
You as well. That's Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play announcer for Sportsnet, and our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
We need that on a shirt. Wine makes everything better. Dan Shulman.
Nachos with Dan?
Yeah, that's a dream.
I'd love to do nachos with Dan.
You know how Jay's Care does raffles? It should be...
Dude, yes.
Nachos yes. with Dan. That's your yes. outing. You just go 100%. Find some nachos.
Like, we will float that to him next time.
Here's a free idea. He mentioned the numbers for the All-Star voting. So, Bo is running away at shortstop. A 398,000 lead on Corey Seager. In terms of votes, and Vladdy only has a 12,000 vote lead on Yandy Diaz. Chapman with a 4,000 vote lead on Josh Young. So this is a bit close, but Kirk fourth in voting among catchers. Brandon Belt sits second for DH. All three Toronto outfielders are in the top 10 with Kevin Kiermaier, George Springer, and Dalton Varsho. Whit Merrifield is third in voting on second base. So they're all kind of in the convo, but
is unfair, but I love how unfair it is. We get good representation there.
Whatever.
It's fun. We got some real all-stars, though.
Canada's having a moment, you know? Taylor, Jamal Murray, every available Blue Jays player in the all-star game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
They don't have the William Nylander problem.
No, they don't. They don't. But Kirky last year, that was a fun one. He's fourth among catchers. So, we'll see. Get voting, everybody. You can get voting. I think you can vote like a... You know what? I should get the exact number how many times you can vote a day, but it's not hard to find. Let's get the Blue Jays in there.
It's a lot. So, yeah, that's why you have a lot of Blue Jays.
okay, so we've got one more guest on the other side of the break. Aaron Rose is going to join us. As we mentioned, the Toronto Raptors are introducing their new head coach today at 1 o'clock. We'll have that live on the show. Ben Ennis will have a 3-hour edition of Fan Drive Time to help you get through that. And then Will and Alex will have the Raptors show at 4 o'clock. They'll have the newest head coach at 4:30 live on the station. So you want to hear from him with the Raptors guys? We got a full day of Raptors coverage to come. But Aaron Rose will join us after the break, and then we'll fit in a baby awake and rake. So send those picks in at 590. 590. Got the Stanley Cup final. Is it awarded tonight? Is the Conn Smythe awarded tonight? Well, we'd be very happy and fat and happy in the morning.
We'd be rich.
Well, we could be, but we could also be drinking the wrong Kool-Aid here with the Jack Eichel hype, and maybe we got sucked into it.
Eating cheap nachos.
Ooh,
with sad faces.
Nobody wants cheap nachos. Unless it's got a lot of cheese and we're all good. Okay, Aaron Rose, after the break.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Another big one today down at OVO. Big press conference. That's what we get most excited about now with the Raptors.
Press conferences.
Learnings.
What
Masai Ujiri thinks and says and does. Not does, because he's not doing much lately. He did hire a new coach, though.
That's the biggest thing he's done in a long time,
Justin. His name's Darko. He's Serbian. There's some tie there to the best player in the world, Nikola Jokic, hopefully. To learn about Darko, before we learn about Darko, let's bring in our next guest, Aaron Rose, Sports Illustrated. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. You had me in a panic. They're not meeting at OVO today. They're meeting at Scotiabank.
Yeah, come on, Justin.
Okay, I was just keeping you on your toes.
There you go.
Scotiabank that's different. That's big time. Usually it's not.
It is. Today's a big day.
What's the difference? You tell me then. It's got to be positive news to be Scotiabank. The Leafs can't be around. What's the difference?
There you go. I guess seasons open at Scotiabank Arena, and I guess seasons end, unless they're ending in Nathan Phillips Square, they end at OVO with bad news.
Darko doesn't want to see that video board. Not yet, at least.
It's overwhelming.
Okay, so why did the Blue Jays go, I don't want to say off the board with the Blue Jays, the Raptors. Ooh. Why did the Raptors go a little off the board? Why did the Raptors end up with Darko Rajakovic? Why, and what do we know about this new coach for the Raptors and where they might be headed based on this coaching hire?
I'd probably be better off answering this question in a couple hours after I hear from these guys, because the truth is that Darko is, as you mentioned, an off-the-board hire. He's somebody with no NBA head coaching experience. And anytime you're talking about assistants, it's a little tough to know what they get credit for. And it sounds like from everything I've read and heard that everyone speaks highly of this guy. I don't know if you'd hear people coming out of the woodworks being like, the Raptors shouldn't have hired this guy. So I don't know if we're going to get negative feedback about him, but seems like a young coach, a player development coach, an offensive coach, and I think the Raptors could use all of those things. That being said, if you had asked me what Nick Nurse would have brought to this team 5 years ago, I probably would have said he's an offensive guru, who's a guy who can develop a bench and knows how to work with bench players. And I think 6 years later, obviously a very successful hire in Nick, but somebody you probably would have said the opposite. So anyone who tells you they know for sure what Darko is going to bring is probably not telling you the truth.
Yeah, a bit of an unknown, obviously. And when there are unknowns that you suddenly need to know a lot about, you do one thing, and that's research. And I'm sure you've researched Darko just a little bit in preparation for today's event down at Scotiabank Arena. In that research, what's the most interesting thing you found?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people listened to that podcast. He was on Basketball Immersion, I think is what it was called. Talked about the 0.5 offense, something the Spurs sort of popularized years ago. And it's just about making quick decisions. And I think the Raptors were among the worst teams in making quick decisions last year. It was a lot of isolation balls. Give the ball to Pascal Siakam, find a mismatch, and he'll dribble the air out of the ball for a few seconds, and then try and take advantage of that mismatch. And I think based on what he said in that podcast, it sounds like he wants everyone making quick decisions, either drive, shoot, or pass. So there's not a lot of time for indecision and mismatch hunting. And I think that's something the Raptors could use. That being said, this isn't a team with a ton of decisive and super talented playmakers right now. So sometimes you just have to build the best offense or the best strategy for the team that you have. And the Raptors have a team that's a little bit clunky right now. And we're going to see what this offseason brings. It's a big pivotal offseason for this team. So, as I said, we're going to have to learn a lot about Darko if he coaches Summer League and then as the season starts, because it's going to be a learning experience for everyone.
Is it fair to assume that with a head coach that seems to have, from our understanding and from yours, a lot of experience with developing players and changing around an offensive structure, that maybe the pieces aren't on the Raptors roster at this point and they would be looking to maybe make a pivot, maybe make a rebuild, maybe a retooling? If you're drawing a conclusion to new coach, maybe new structure, is it fair to assume that that might be what Masai might allude to today?
So I don't think Masai will necessarily directly allude to that. He'll probably say, we are here to win. We want to win in Toronto, as he does in all these press conferences.
Right.
We can play the Masai Ujiri win the number of times he says that game if you guys won this afternoon.
It's a dangerous drinking game.
Yes. But I think if they had hired a more established coach, someone like Doc Rivers, who it sounds like was never given consideration, Mike Budenhoser, even Sergio Scariolo, who we know was given consideration, but he's, I think, 62 years old and has been a winner everywhere he's gone in Europe, you might have been able to read into that, or understandably could have read into that and said, these coaches aren't here for a rebuild. And I would say that Darko at least doesn't project that image. So does that mean the Raptors will rebuild or retool? I'm not quite ready to say that. And I was on your show the morning of the trade deadline, adamant, I think, as we all were, that the Raptors were going to pivot toward that retool or rebuild. And obviously they didn't. So sometimes you never know. And it sounds like that's the indication everyone has, is they have no idea what the Raptors are doing. But I think the Darko hire keeps the options open for this team. What they will do specifically, I don't think anyone knows right now.
Well, could Fred VanVleet just like force them into that rebuild? He, of course, opted out of the final year of his deal. The player option turns it down. It makes all the sense in the world. I think everyone knew this was going to happen, but it still like clouds the future. And we just had Adam Lefko on about an hour ago, and he was pretty convinced he's going somewhere else. So that would leave the Raptors without any guards rather than guard depth, which we've been talking about for so long. So, you know, if you know, I guess your take on Fred's decision, which again, not really a surprise, but what you think is going to happen, where you're leaning in terms of Fred's future, and what it would mean to the Raptors if Fred just walked out that door.
So, as you mentioned, not surprising that he opted out. I think everyone foresaw this coming. He will get a raise and he will get more years. So that isn't all that surprising. And I think in the past, we've learned, whether it was through, I think, Fred's free agency in the past or Kyle's free agency in the past, that sometimes these guys head into free agency and people are concerned. They're going to leave the Raptors. They're going to get these huge offers from Detroit or whatever, New York or whatever, and they don't end up materializing. And the Raptors still pay them handsomely, sometimes more than they probably need to, although all of those contracts end up looking pretty good. But I think the Raptors are really good at retaining their guys. So I wouldn't be surprised if Fred came back, because in the NBA, with the way the salary cap works, you can't, it's not like you have Fred leaves and all of a sudden you have $22 million to go spend on someone else. So the Raptors have no way to replace him. And as you mentioned, doesn't sound like anyone here is a big fan of Malachi Flynn in the starting lineup. So the Raptors don't have a way to replace him on the roster. They would need to work out a sign and trade. And I think people are hoping for some huge return in the sign and trade. And generally speaking, that doesn't happen. So I think Fred will be back, because I think the Raptors are in a really bad spot if he's not back. But I could totally understand Fred's perspective. He just signed with a big agency, one that we know is linked to the Lakers, Clutch Sports. The Lakers sort of have a need at that kind of position. Could he go there? Maybe. I think it's tougher for the Suns, but we've heard rumors about Houston potentially being interested. We've heard rumors about the Orlando Magic being interested. And both of those teams don't need the Raptors' help to bring Fred in. We know Fred's a guy who wants to get paid, understandably so. I do too. And I could totally see him taking his talents elsewhere this summer. So as we talked about, big summer for the Raptors with a couple free agents that could go in either direction.
Justin and I were debating this earlier in the show about if Fred's trade value would have been higher at the trade deadline or in a sign and trade now, a couple months later, after the way that the season went. I mean, you can always do revisionist history and look back at maybe what you could have got back then, but does it already seem like you're getting less for Fred VanVleet at this point? And I know we don't know what a sign and trade could be, but you know, if you're trying to speculate the return.
So we know after the trade deadline that Masai Ujiri made a comment along the lines of, like, we will be able to get whatever we could have got at the trade deadline in the summer. And he mentioned, I think there are like 29 losers, I think was his line. And you know, with the exception of Denver, everyone, and probably including Denver, everyone else is looking to get better. So you could make the argument that teams are looking for guys like Fred VanVleet, and more teams are looking for guys like Fred VanVleet, and it's easier to add a guard like that and sort of a crucial player to your offense in the summer. That being said, sign and trades don't bring back a ton of value. And specifically if those teams that don't need to work a sign and trade because they have the cap space can just bring in Fred, there's no need for a sign and trade. So they're not just going to do the Raptors a favor and give them something in return for Fred. That being said, I remember reading Grange's tweets at the time. And I think, you know, when we were drawing up big trades ahead of the trade deadline, could the Raptors get a first-round pick or two first-round picks or this young player for Fred VanVleet? And based on Grange's reporting at the time, it sounds like the Raptors actually weren't offered very much for Fred. Maybe because those teams saw him as a rental player or someone that they could just pursue in the summer. So they're like, we don't need to give the Raptors much. Now, some of those teams might be kicking themselves because it might have cost them a championship, although I think Denver would have been tough to beat. But maybe if the offers were small at the trade deadline, then you're not really missing out on much if the offers are small in the in a sign-and-trade deal. But you would think that the Raptors probably could have gotten more for Fred at the trade deadline, even if it wasn't very much.
So you're going to hear the word win a lot, as you mentioned, whether you like it or not today.
For sure.
But what do you want to hear? If you're a Raptors fan, what should you want to hear? What would satisfy you from Masai Ujiri today? You know, I guess separating Darko from this equation a little bit, because, you know, a little best behavior, this is who I am, a little introduction. The real stuff, the meat of the conversation is probably going to come from Masai, or should come from Masai. So if you're a fan today, what do you want to hear from the president of the Toronto Raptors?
The truth is, you want to hear things that he's not going to tell you. I want to know what the direction of this organization is. I look around the league, and there's probably 27 teams. I went through them briefly the other day, 26, 27 teams that I look at and say, okay, I know what you're doing or trying to do. Will it work? I don't know. Probably not for most of these teams, but at least I see the direction that they're going. With the Raptors, I have no idea what they're doing. Are they trying to build around Scottie Barnes? Maybe. Are they trying to continue to run this back and make a few tinkers like they did for so long with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry? That obviously worked. They might be doing that too. So I don't know what they're doing. And I think, and I'm sure, if it's not asked by someone else, I will ask Masai, what's the plan here? But he's not going to tell us. He's not going to say, as we talked about, we're trying to win in Toronto. He's not going to say, you know what? I'm trading OG Anunoby. I'm trading Pascal Siakam this summer. We're going to try and rebuild around Scottie Barnes. So unfortunately, and I guess it makes sense, I don't think we're going to get a ton of transparency from Masai Ujiri. I think we'll get a lot of winning. And then I think when the draft rolls around, that's when we might see what really the plan for this organization is moving forward, because it's almost at this point, it's like your words aren't going to mean much. You're not going to tell us much. Let's see it through the actions of what this team is trying to do moving forward.
What do you think the Raptors should do with Pascal Siakam?
I think they need to take calls on these guys, because I think they're in a really tough spot. Now, I think, as we talked about at the trade deadline, when you traded that first round pick next year, it made it more complicated, because if you're trading your best player in Pascal Siakam this summer, presumably, I think it's a fair assumption that you are going to be worse next year. And you're worse next year, you weren't very good last year, and now you're giving up, you know, unless they're a bottom six team, and it's pretty hard to do that, you're giving up the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th pick in the draft for Jakob Poeltl. So maybe that's just a sunk cost, and you see what you can get for Pascal Siakam. And if you end up giving the Spurs the 8th pick in the draft next year, so be it. But when I look at this team, they only have six good, valuable players. I'm taking Precious Achiuwa out of that equation after his rough year last year. But three of those guys are expiring free agents, and that we're going to assume that Gary Trent Jr. is opting out. So that's Gary, Fred, and Jakob Poeltl. Scottie Barnes, I'm going to assume, is not being traded, and that leaves two guys with value. That's Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby. And OG Anunoby is the best defender on the team and one of the few guys that can shoot on this team. Now, he has his own contract issues, but if you don't want to trade maybe your best or second best shooter on a team that needs shooting, the only guy left over is Pascal Siakam, who has a bit of a talent overlap with Scottie Barnes. So I'm looking at him and saying, okay, what can I get for Pascal Siakam? Now, is Masai going to make that decision? We're going to have to wait until the draft night to find out. But those two guys, OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam, are the guys I'd be looking at to move this summer.
Could be a lot of action to come. I mean, I guess we kind of hope so, especially for you. We're talking to Aaron Rose, Raptors reporter, Sports Illustrated. Okay, so last night we did see the NBA champions crown the Denver Nuggets and Kitchener's very own Jamal Murray. How special was it to watch what he's been able to do, overcoming injury, getting to the stage, being, you know, a co-star with the best player in the league and having his own moment and superstardom that we saw last night?
I think it's awesome anytime the NBA sees a team like Toronto, like Denver, win a championship. Mm-hmm. Because obviously Kawhi Leonard came to Toronto and maybe that was sort of the mercenary guy. But this was a team that fans saw grow and develop. It wasn't you go out, you make a big signing, you're in Miami, and it seems to happen all the time, even though that Miami team was actually not like, I think, a lot of the other Miami teams. But anytime you see a team that doesn't get to win a championship with homegrown guys who you've seen come up short before, you've seen battle injuries and overcome the odds and all those things. We're talking about a second-round pick who became the best player in the league and a Canadian kid who, you know, battled an ACL injury and overcame it. That's really awesome to see. So I'm thrilled for Denver. I don't think Denver's going away anytime soon. But again, anytime we see teams like this, like Toronto, win championships, it's awesome for the NBA.
Okay, so a new era in Raptors history begins today, not at OVO, at Scotiabank Arena at 1 o'clock. Appreciate you joining us this morning, and you'll learn lots today, and we'll chat with you down the road, Aaron.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks so much. That's Aaron Rose, Raptors reporter for Sports Illustrated. And as we mentioned, we'll have the introductory press conference live on our station at 1 o'clock today. And you can hear from Raptors head coach at 4:30 with Will and Alex on the Raptors show. So lots to come, lots to learn, hopefully, of this new era of the Toronto Raptors.
I've done that before. Showed up at Scotiabank Arena a press conference was at Ford Performance Center.
Ooh, that's not even close. You couldn't even get there in time.
I missed about 5 minutes. I was all right.
What speed limit? Were you on the Gardner there?
What's that? No, I was just early.
Oh, good for you, Justin.
And then I was not early.
All right, let's hit a wake and rake to wrap up the show.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
Okie dokie, Stanley Cup final, game 5 tonight. Do we see the Stanley Cup, the greatest trophy in sports, lifted? We didn't even pick who the cup would be handed to next and next. I love that, but we don't have it.
Oh, we could have done an order.
We don't have it. We are running out of time.
Yeah, the Stanley Cup, it's in the building, and I think that will be motivating for the Vegas Golden Knights. Mm-hmm. So how do you play that? Well, you could look at point totals, you could look at, you know, goals or something like that. I'm just going to say, hey, how about just total output, and how do you measure output in hockey? You measure output in shots. I think you either go Sergei Bobrovsky over 28.5 saves, assuming he's not a bum in this game, and I think that's a safe assumption. Or you do the total shots for Vegas. The one that I could find was Bobrovsky's total saves. So I'm going to take over 28.5 saves for Sergei Bobrovsky. Hopefully he doesn't get pulled. I think there's going to be a lot of pucks headed in his direction because you're trying to win a Stanley Cup on home ice. So I think they went over that total at least in one game. They pulled Bobrovsky in one of the other games at home, but they went over that total in game one, and I expect them to be doing the same thing with the chance to win a championship. So over 28.5 shots, or saves rather, for Sergei Bobrovsky.
I hope that a lot of those are Jack Eichel shots, okay? Let's just manifest the Jack Eichel performance for the ages tonight.
And save those Marchessault shots for us there, Bob.
Let's hope that he's more of a passer tonight. Okay, so for my pick, I'm going to the Blue Jays-Orioles game. Huge series here for the Toronto Blue Jays as we teed up with Dan Shulman. 3 games in Baltimore against a team that they're competing with quite closely. Chris Bassett on the mound tonight. He is a new dad, and he has been playing very rad. Oh, sorry. I'm going to go over strikeouts for Chris Bassett tonight. I'm seeing it at 4.5. It's got a little juice. I would even probably do 5.5. He's been dialed in. I mean, a joy to watch. So, Chris Bassett
that
on the mound.
Seems low, doesn't it?
The Hound on the mound.
Seems real low.
Well, I'm seeing it at 4.5 somewhere, so I'm going to grab it while I can. 5.5 might happen.
His last five strikeouts last 8-5-4-7, 8-5-7. I mean, it seems like 4.5 seems like a really good bet.
Okay, so Chris Bassett over K is for me. Let's go through some picks. Morning, Ailish and Justin. I'm going Jays run line, -1.5 tonight versus the Orioles. That's career Chris, who's in Newmarket. Oh, yeah, Newmarket, great spot.
Here's Corey from Port Hope. Bad luck yesterday staying away from Oakland, taking plus money on the NL Central leading Pirates against the Cubs, +120. Pirates money line is Corey from Port Hope's pick.
Okay.
Sorry. That was not Corey from
Port
Hope.
This is Corey from Port
Hope. That was an unnamed texter. This is Corey
from Port Hope. This is Corey from Port Hope. For my wake and rake pick today, I'll take Atlanta -1.5 over the Tigers.
Will from Niagara, he's going Hound on the mound over strikeouts.
My guy.
Sharing a brain.
I love it. Oh, God. How did I get this text? Okay, Neil in Newfoundland. Good morning. I took the wrong guy coming back from injury yesterday. Berrettini out 2 months, didn't look sharp at all yet. Milos Raonic is back, eh? Out 2 years, looked like he was ready to win a tournament. I saw that yesterday. Today I have an outright winner that I love. ATP, Hertongombosch.
That's just the tournament. You kind of got away
with
not saying that.
I know, but I do it for Neil. Arthur Fields to win over Adrian Mannarino. Fields is on a really good run and has 2 grass matches coming to this one, which he's won every set. Mannarino has gone through a tough stretch for months and hasn't had any tune-up matches on grass, so take Fields plus money at 115.
Wow, Neil picking a dog. I like that. Neil likes a dog? I like the dog. Okay. And final one. Hey, guys, been a while. This is Cody from St. Kitts. He loves Belt to get 1.5 bases tonight. Kramer has a good record against Springer, Bo, and Vlad, so buyer beware on the money line. But, yeah.
We don't know if he's playing.
Belt's back in the lineup. He's been hot, but that hammy might just bite back.
Okay, let's pick one then.
Okay, so we got the strikeouts. That correlates with the I'm kind of... Want to go to the dog with Neil? Arthur Fields might be starting soon, though. How about Corey from Port Hope? Because I messed up his text. Atlanta, run okay. line.
Atlanta run line. Yes, the game, the tennis match is at 9:30, so we can't do that one. Sorry, Neil. So we're going to do Corey from Port Hope, Atlanta over the Tigers, and let's parlay that up quickly because we are up against the clock.
We are really up against it.
Don't worry.
So maybe just throw out a fake number. In the range of plus 500?
I think we're plus 500. Yep, I like that a lot. It is plus 428, so there you go. Okay. There's your Tuesday morning wake and rake. Stay tuned for our coverage of the Raptors' newest head coach all day today, 1 o'clock with Ben Ennis, and 4:30 with the Raptors Show. We'll chat with you tomorrow.